Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. I know some of you probably tuned in last week and said, oh, no, they're running the show from the week before. That's right. We did that because I figured there were a lot of people who wanted to hear the debate, and I don't know if it was a good decision or not, but I thought that I'd let those who wanted to hear it firsthand, because you can always listen to it probably 20 times later, but I know that, to give them a chance. And then also, these shows have been going on for, well, this is the fifth in the series, and I thought some people may have wanted to get a kind of refresher, or maybe have missed the show from the week before. So I decided to go ahead and let everybody have the shot at this, hearing the show over again. And I watched the debate. I did. Okay. And I can even address that maybe a little bit later today's show, although it's not really about what life of our Earth is like and how it develops here. But, you know, even politics has something to do with that, I think. If you would like to call in, now this is a show about metaphysics and spirituality, in case you don't know it. It's Why Life Is. And if you would like to call in, you can, if you're in the U.S., at 877-876-5227. Those of you in Canada, 888-815-9756, while we're on the air. And anything you'd like to talk about dealing with metaphysics and spirituality would be great. If it deals with the specific show topic, that's also, of course, relevant. I want to bring us up to speed, since it's been a couple of weeks since I've been live, and talk about what this show has brought in so far. Just a minute or two, not long, about what life is like and how it started on Earth, and the behind-the-scenes metaphysical principles that some people who listen to the show are aware of, and others may not be. And that is that about 4.5 billion years ago, the Earth came into existence, and its purpose was to create life that had, we'll say, an unusual characteristic, in that it would grow very fast, it would develop more quickly than most other planets, and it would be able to deal with unusual adversities. Eventually, when human life would become developed on it, that human life would have the opportunity to overcome some of the more distressing elements of evil and destruction to life, because that's what evil does. And it would be a real challenging kind of planet for a soul, which we all are, by the way, for a human soul to exist on. And the souls that are here in voluntary concert. They work together. And I know some of you are saying, well, if this is really one of the toughest and worst planets, and I'm here voluntarily, where do I get off, and how soon can I get out of here? Well, actually, that choice is made before every incarnation. And believe it or not, you wouldn't be here if you hadn't made that choice before this incarnation. So it's really, truly our choice, although in illusion and because we forget. We don't realize that while we're physically alive. Gradually, we realize that as we move on to other dimensions of time and space and go develop ourselves back into being in soul consciousness and thought. Okay. So 4.5 billion. So each billion's 1,000 million. So it's a lot of, that's over, we'll say, 4,500 million years ago. Earth came into existence. It took about 500 million years, give or take. I say it's probably closer to 4.1 billion before any life actually developed on Earth. Earth kind of got crashed into by another subplanet, a little smaller than Earth, about the size of Mars. And the two kind of joined together, but a piece of it broke out and became the moon. And so that moon which we can say is one of the reasons that life exists as it does on Earth at this time, is a critical element. And that was part of the plan. You have to have an Earth that, or a planet that is very stable for life to develop at least as quickly as it has on Earth, and for it to reach the state of having human life on, which is very advanced, within the short period of time, relatively, and for, 4.5 billion years sounds like a long time, but that's really a short time to develop life as high in development as a human being is. Now, there are things called rounds, and each round develops a specific focus on a type of energy. And as the rounds progress from 1, 2, 3, 4, etc., each round adds another focus of an additional one of these energies that helps life to grow more quickly. It actually, for those of you who are familiar with the idea of chakras or centers, it helps to grow the chakra or center that uses the type of energy that is being focused on the planet at that time, if a life form has that center within it. We have all of them, so we get it all the time, but some life forms are benefited while others are not necessarily at certain periods of life development. In the first round, there's only one type of ray that's focused on, and the first round is a focus on first ray energy for the whole round, but there are sub-rounds that go in the opposite direction from 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 during the length of time that the first round existed. And this is going to sound strange, but the first round existed from the inception of the planet, which is 4.5 billion years ago, to 600 million years ago. So most of our planet only had one focus of one ray type on the planet, and the dominant ray was actually a thing called the first ray. This is an odd condition, very odd, because it means since only one type of energy is being focused on, creatures, life, develops very, very slowly because you don't have more than one sense and one center, one chakra, that is being developed at the same time in any life form. That's it. You just got one. And some life forms, it may skip over some of the time because they don't have the corresponding sub-ray focus that is happening at that particular time. And so it doesn't help those life forms to really accelerate their sense development, their awareness of their environment. And the results are they grow very slowly. So life is slow. Another quality about the first ray, it's a ray of creation, which is a good thing, but it's also a ray of destruction. So you have the highest levels of both creation and destruction during the period from 4.5 billion years ago to 600 million years ago. And the interesting thing is that this has been known about in the philosophies of ageless wisdom for before there was recorded history, that what I just explained has been known about. But the odd thing about it is it's only been the last 5 or 10 years that Earth scientists have discovered that this is true about our planet. As an example, what I told you about the Earth, at least in the last 2 decades, it's been true, that the Earth was smashed into and created our moon, etc. That's a highly, you could call it destructive, but it was also a creative act. And most people didn't know about that if you go back 3 decades ago, for sure. And besides that, there's another thing called snowball Earth, where the Earth froze up and almost all of life was destroyed about 630 million years ago or so. And this was the end of this first ray, one ray focused period. And it ended with a unfortunate, I wouldn't call it a bang, I call it a destructive note of killing most life off, but making a life that remained incredibly tenacious, because the adversity of having seas as much as a mile thick with ice covering everything on Earth or if it isn't a sea, it's just a couple miles of glaciers covering everything. There was no place for life to basically exist except inside the crust of the Earth near the mantle, but not quite that deep, where it was warm enough so that life could kind of exist without any other sources other than the energy, the heat coming from the Earth itself, and some minerals. So life learned how to grow under the most adverse of conditions. Obviously, no photosynthesis going on down there. It was total darkness. And that lasted for, probably 30 million years until the Earth started to warm up again due to volcanic actions. And it melted the ice and changed the atmosphere, and we got a little greenhouse effect going. And maybe the sun changed a bit, too. And the Earth, sure enough, became more hospitable. And we had the beginning of the second round. Now, the second round of life focuses on two, not one, but two centers at a time. You might say, well, what's the big deal? Well, that's a huge amount of improvement. It's not only just doubling the amount of sense. Since the senses are used together in different ways, it's more exponential kind of reasoning rather than additional. And so you get a lot more effect out of doubling than you might expect. And so life really took off. I mean, we had a tremendous increase in the kind of life that was available, from little one-celled organisms, mostly bacteria, and then a few other kinds of, we'll call them one-celled creatures, to basically multi-celled, organized, working together kind of cells that created more animated life forms, and also oxygen improved tremendously on the planet. And these little boogers started moving around a lot, whereas the one-celled things didn't do much at all for billions of years. And all of a sudden we got life 600 million years ago that's starting to really have some activity. By 550 million years ago, there's a lot of new kinds of creatures running around. Quite a change. All because the second round of life, where two senses are focused on at a time. Now, some creatures develop more than two senses. They develop three or four, but only two of those three or four were focused on at any time. And so life started to diversify. Some life really got much more advanced than other life because its senses matched the rays as they changed over the time during the second round. And this is all in accord with a plan. This is not being done through just evolution. Evolution has something to do with it, but there is planning. There is a design. You can call it intelligent design. It's not the kind of stuff that many religious people would say, because I'm telling you that evolution is part of God's plan. It's not outside of, it's included. Why do we have to exclude it, actually? But there is much more to it, because there are so many pieces in the puzzle that some of them don't fit in terms of time as far as evolutionary development very well. Some of them actually stick out as being not very possible or probable to have happened within the time period. And so you look at that and you start saying, well, evolution alone might not explain this, but if you have a plan and you're using evolution, then it's fine. There's no reason to really try to exclude it. It would be kind of silly to do so, because the evidence is overwhelming that evolution is going on all around us all the time. You know, they can perform experiments of many creatures, fruit flies included, which is some of the first, where they can prove that evolution is a reality. So it's silly for us to be trying to disprove it, because for some reason we think it's ungodly. That makes no sense. Okay, so during the second round, life did develop fairly rapidly compared to the first round, and the second round lasted a lot shorter time. The first round went from 4.5 billion to 600 million. That's 3.9 billion years for the first round of time. And that's about how long there was any kind of significant life. There may have been some first beginnings of life like 4.1 billion years ago, but possibly the only sustainable life on the planet was from about 3.9 billion, because that's all they found. So The rest of it may have been killed off by these impacts and other things. At any rate, from 600 million all the way to 250 million years ago, there was just two rays of focus of energy on our planet at a time. And the second ray was the majority of the focus of all the rays that were coming in. So that was where the focus was. But it doesn't mean that the second ray was always being focused in. It was on. Sometimes it wasn't even in focus. But most of the time, not the time, it was in focus because it was the second round. And so if we add these up, we subtract 250 from 600, we have 350 million years, give or take, of time where there was approximately a focus on two instead of one ray at a time. And you might say, well, how come it got so much shorter? Well, it has to do with how fast life is developing. You're getting about the same amount of life development in these periods of time. It's just that it's going a lot faster. And so since it's going a lot faster, you've got more rays focused and all the other stuff that's happening synergistically between the life forms, and evolution is doing its thing. So basically, you don't need as much time. The first round needs a huge amount of time. Second round needs a lot less time. Obviously, it's significant. Almost, was it 8-9 times less time? Okay, so then, as I talked about in the last show, up there was the third round. And the third round, it developed the dinosaurs as being the creatures of preeminence. For about 180 million years they were. And they existed until about 65 million years ago. And if you subtract 65 million from approximately 250 million, well, you could say that the third round lasted, give or take, about 185 million years or so. And that makes every bit of sense from the standpoint that, well, okay, you've got to have enough time for the third round to do its thing, but again, it's a lot shorter. You can see that than the time for the round before it. And you're adding only one more ray. You're not doubling the amount like you were with the first, between the first and second round. You're only increasing it by effectively a third more. And so you don't have quite the same impact. The second round has a huge impact. You can see that. But still, it's big. And you end up with the most powerful life forms that probably will ever be on Earth, because power is part of the third ray itself. These creatures were focused on with the third ray more than anything else. So they got big and they got nasty and powerful. And the throat chakra, which corresponds to the third ray, they developed that exceptionally well. And these were beings that, creatures that were formidable in every respect. They took over the planet and they dominated it for at least 180 or so million years. That's longer than anything else ever has. That's the most any animal life has ever dominated. And they got so ferocious that really there was virtually nothing else that could probably dominate them. I mean, these are nasty dudes. So they had to be eliminated through more forceful measures, which is typical. And again, you have this terrible crisis thing that takes place because the sub rays are going in the reverse direction. The first ray always comes in a sub-sense at the end of the round, and that when it comes at the end of the round, it does two things. It first destroys the existing life, and then it helps to create new life. That's what the first ray tends to do, and that's what it did. And it does it usually with a bang rather than a whimper, but it can do both if it chooses. And this is all, again, in the design. And I'm trying to show, I hope, that there's some real interesting things going on here behind the scenes. And I find this just amazing. I was going to talk about this for a few minutes, but I've gotten off on it because I think it's just amazing how it shows that there's a real plan. And that plan has been known about for a long, long time, long before there's been recorded history. And that plan is part of a major part of how life is developed on Earth. Yes, there's evolution. Evolution makes every bit of sense, but this plan is bigger than how evolution actually functions. It's a design meant to create a world just like the one we have. You could do a lot of other kinds of worlds. I've played around with this, by the way, using different systems with these rays, et cetera, and you would end up with a lot of different kinds of life. Now, Earth itself, the physical Earth, is more responsive to the third ray than any others, so it's very much active, it's very powerful, it has a lot of, energy taking place on it frequently. And so we're used to it, but compared to other worlds, it is the most volcanically active, most earthquake active, because its skin is in constant movement. And when it's not in movement, it's in constant tension. So this is an unusual condition for a planet. Planets usually aren't along the third ray, because there's obviously six others. And this is the ray that produces this effect in worlds more than any other. Not every world has this kind of, we'll call it, high activity that Earth has. And it has an effect on all of life. When activity is that high, the life itself has to be very high in its activity. It has to keep up with it, or it'll be destroyed and it wouldn't be able to develop itself. So it has to be able to match it. That's, of course, somewhat evolutionary as well, that it has to adapt. If it can't adapt to the type of world that Earth is, it won't survive. And Earth definitely forces a lot of life to be able to adapt to the high levels of activity that exist on it. Okay, and you might say, well, what happened after the dinosaurs were gone? Well, now that brings us up to today's show, basically. And we're now up to the four rays being focused on Earth from about 64 or so million years ago on, and the very, very, very beginnings of what I would call how human life was developed. Now, for a lot of you, you're going to say, wait a second, humans weren't around 64 million years ago. Well, I'm going to tell you something surprising in today's show and tell you that in some ways humans were, but we won't find any fossilized remains of what these kind of humans were, because they didn't exist in physical form. They only existed in electromagnetic form, similar to the way that humans exist right after they die in physical form for sometimes a few minutes to a few hours or days. And some people call it the etheric double, or there's a lot of different names for it. But that's the only kind of form of humans that existed. And they weren't really completely human in many respects, because they didn't have a fully developed personality and a lot of other factors. And they existed in very strange places, like at the poles, especially the North Pole. Wow. And that's because they were best left on their own and not interacting with other kinds of existing life, because they were in this etheric condition. They weren't physical. They really couldn't do much. They lived off of the energy coming in originally to the poles from the aurora borealis, and in those days there was a lot more of that going on. But they also existed through energies coming from the Earth. And later on, they lived from ocean current energy and volcanic energy under the sea. That's going to sound very strange. Because, again, they were electromagnetic. They weren't formed in physical form, so they didn't eat plants or animals, and they didn't have a physical body. We couldn't see them unless we were using new kinds of instruments today to see certain kinds of electromagnetic radiation. And even then, it might be difficult, because their electromagnetic energy bodies were at a different phase than what we usually look for energies at. In other words, you couldn't turn your television on and suddenly discover that there's a free-floating electromagnetic creature floating around your room, because it doesn't pick up that kind of signal. But nonetheless, they did exist they came into existence about 64 million years ago, and they were the very first race of humans, although incomplete, and they are electromagnetic, and they existed till about 32 million years, about half of the time. And that's a very long period of time. But the most important part of the fourth ray coming in is that the sacral center starts to become the focus of development in life forms. Many more life forms start to develop a sacral center, especially humans. And the interesting thing is that it changes the way the balance of life forms are. Dinosaurs, believe it or not, could be somewhat affectionate and loving. I know that sounds hard to believe. And they even had, some of them had some group structures and families, and they even may have hunted as acts within family structures. Some of them. The more intelligent ones. But the interesting thing about it is what they couldn't do is they couldn't reflect and plan the ways that they were going to be giving to themselves and to others. They didn't have a good planning system. Their brains weren't developed for it because they had more reptilian types of brains, which don't do much of that planning thing. But the brains are really a consequence of the change in the rays and in which focus of energies are going in, not the cause. Today, everybody thinks the brains are the cause of things. They're not really. No. Well, anyway, I'm going to tell you a lot more about this because it's really interesting. But I'm going to do it when we come back from break. And we're going to go to break right now. And we will be back. I'll get it out in about 2.5 minutes.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. We are discussing tonight the fourth round of life development on Earth, and we're right there right now. For those of you who heard the first part of the show, I hope it has helped to put it all together, because I know I go from show to show, and it's hard to, you know, if there's a week in between, or two in this last case, it's hard to remember all of the pieces of the puzzle. Hopefully tonight we're getting those pieces together. Okay, so dinosaurs actually weren't as, we'll say, non-loving creatures as they're sometimes depicted. They actually had a little bit of, we'll call it, second ray in them, because after all, they went through, the predecessors went through the second round, and they were in the third round. And so they had some element of love. They actually got together, actually worked together, much more than they have been depicted, I think, in his history. But more and more, they're discovering that they did do this. Even some of the most ferocious of the dinosaurs, actually, not the hurting ones, but also the meteors, or actually some of them work together. So this is new. This is very new. And in many ways, dinosaurs may have had behaviors that were like some kinds of birds as well. And we know the birds, of course. Birds that flock together, you know, that old saying. So they tend to stay together. And that's true of dinosaurs as well. But what they couldn't do is they couldn't plan from their past and their future how they might want to share and cooperate and give together. This is a quality that requires the fourth ray to be in focus and the sacral center to be operating. Now, it was a quality that started to develop out of, we'll call it, pre-dinosaurs that were like reptiles that had certain mammalian qualities. But they became mostly small little creatures because they couldn't compete against dinosaurs. And they never really got to develop too much of the qualities I'm talking about. They had to develop more of it than not because it was the only way they could survive. They were too small, and they had to be out mostly in the evening when the dinosaurs kind of slept during the evening. And this was the only time when they could really show that they could plan together and work together more than the dinosaurs could. They still couldn't defeat the dinosaurs. As long as there were dinosaurs, there was not going to be any other dominant kind of life on Earth. It's just that simple. Everything else was just a meal for some other dinosaur. And so mammals were kind of running around, you know, poaching eggs here and there where they could from dinosaurs. But most of the time, they were just trying to stay out of their way and go out at night. They had usually big eyes. And they were able to plan, though, and they would put food away. Things that dinosaurs generally did not do. And that's one of the characteristics that would show sacral center activity, some reflection on themselves and their behaviors, and reflections on themselves as being part of a community working together to survive. They developed signals and would warn of potential attacks from predators, more so than the herding dinosaurs did, which had a little bit of this quality in a sense, but they certainly didn't store food. They just would walk around looking for food from one place to another. Very different than some mammals eventually did. And also, mammals started to develop another part of the brain that was missing in dinosaurs. They started to develop more of the cerebral part of the brain, the ability to compare. The ability to compare one thing to another. This works with the sacral center and allows creatures to start learning on their own without being given an instinct of thought from a group soul. One of the things that's interesting about dinosaurs is that while they had a lot of intelligence, the intelligence mostly came from their group soul. A very little was learned during their lifetime, and certainly almost none of it was handed down from one generation to the next. This is not necessarily true of mammals. It was probably true of the earliest mammals, but as the fourth ray kept focusing in on Earth, more and more of the inner reflectivity and inner thought, and we'll say comparative thought, differentiating thought, and differentiating ways of cooperating and sharing and giving together was developed through the sacral center being a sense. And the sense is of balance. The sense is the ability to sense one's environment and know what is good in a material sense and what is good in terms of getting along with others, usually of the same kind, but sometimes of similar kind of animals. Also, getting along with even plants, an interesting thing. Some animals had the ability to regulate their use of plants better as the sacral center developed more. Now, this took millions of years to happen. And first thing that had to really go was the dinosaurs. They had to be wiped out because they were really encroaching on any kind of life, getting very far with this kind of new behaviors that was in the animal abilities, or in the mammal abilities, I should say, but not part of their structure. So the fourth round brought in a new kind of intelligence, a new kind of activity. The Earth is still very active, but in this case, the animals that are around, the mammals and birds, became much more interdependent and much more able to cope and adapt with changes. And this is an interesting thing, because a lot of people say, well, didn't the dinosaurs have incredible adaptation? They did within the world that was given to them. But they couldn't adapt if the world really got tough suddenly. And their world never did that, because when it did, they became extinct pretty quick. So their intelligence was about the world that they had, which for many millions of years remained pretty constant. And when it didn't, they quickly disappeared. We have dinosaurs that existed 130 million years ago that were gone in 1 million years, but had been around for 100 million years before that, or at least 60 or 70. And so that's a strange thing of how quickly they could disappear if you change a few things about the kinds of plants or the temperatures or the amount of humidity and water. I mean, these kinds of things they could adapt to, but they needed a lot of time to get into the adaptation, and they weren't quick adapters. Mammals are much more quickly adaptable because they were able to use this sense of reflection that allowed them to figure things out more quickly about the changes that were going on about them. That's a big difference. It's a huge difference. And actually, in an Earth that is trying to develop eventually a very intelligent being, us, we're not really mammals. We came out of mammals, but we are a different creature completely. We have the ability to understand and co-create with our creator. No mammal can do that. That's not a human being. And so human beings are unique and different. Don't think we're just a little bit more DNA than an ape, and we just happen to have a few more qualities. No, that's the mistake that some biologists make. And it's because we don't understand that the sensors play a key role in this. We can sense our own creator, whereas animals can't. So they don't go building churches and go worshiping them or whatever, because they have no sense of that. Okay, so the fourth round begins about 64 million years ago. There's these weird kind of electromagnetic semi-human creatures running around at the poles and then later on around some of the oceans. And they really are only in a developmental period. I would not call them, by our standards today, truly human, because almost all of their thought was being helped out through the beginning individual souls that were barely able to communicate with them, and then also these oversouls, some of them call them angel souls or solar angels, that were helping out. But basically, these were not the kind of humans that you could say, well, let's go to dinner or something with, because they wouldn't have any idea what that was. They were learning basically how to recognize each other and interact, and I can't really tell you much more of what they did because, you know, there isn't a heck of a lot known about them. They had no recorded history. What's known is mostly in mystical sources. And there's nothing impressioned in the mental world because they did not have a fully developed personality. And so their mental thoughts were very limited. They had mostly astral thoughts, which are not recorded or left for anybody to be able to resource. So there's very little that's known about either one of these two races. The first is the boreal race that lived out in the North Pole, mostly. And then there's this aquatic, you know, sea race that kind of lived off of the energy of waves and volcanoes underneath the ocean. And so, you know, neither one of these, there's anything that is all that amazing about, other than the fact they technically are the first humans. The first ones went from 64 million years ago to 32, and then the next one went from 32 to 16. Not surprising, I guess, if you just do the math on it. But it's very interesting because out of the second race, the third race, which some people call the Lemurians, the third race actually had a number of different sub-races to it, seven total. And each one, the first started off being very similar to the second. It was much more etheric than it was even physical. And if you go back like 15 million years ago, these creatures were like 90% etheric and maybe 10% physical. And what remains of them in any physical sense is too hard to distinguish because so much of their existence is dependent upon an electromagnetic body. So we would have a great deal of trouble probably even finding anything that resembled fossilized remains of them. It is an interesting point to realize at the same time mammals are taking over the entire planet and become the supreme type of life form in terms of animals. They are also looking like and becoming more developed towards a human design, especially the ones that were the monkeys and then apes. And how the humans actually, the electromagnetic parts of the humans actually started to at first develop a physical body was that rather than spend an extra 10 million years, which is the guesstimate, to develop a physical body, it was experimented with attempting to join an animal body with this etheric human consciousness and beingness. Joining two etheric bodies effectively and using the physical body of the animal. Now, this sounds kind of gross, doesn't it? Yeah. But that's what happened. And it was to save millions of years of development time. And apparently it eventually worked. It took like about 6 million years, give or take, for it to all work out. But still, even if it took 6 million or 5 million, 5 to 6 million, it actually saved about that much time over again. So it saved another 5 million. So if we hadn't done this, if this hadn't been the plan and it figured out to be tried, we, as we are today, would be still very, very primitive beings. And there wasn't enough time for that to take place. So this great experiment was made to try to combine human consciousness to some extent and etheric energies with the bodies of certain more advanced, we'll call them ape-like creatures. This is really going to screw up a good deal of paleontology, and it's going to make it most difficult to find the earliest sources of humans. But nonetheless, that wasn't the reason it was done. It was done to save time. And that was done about 16.5 million years ago, finally, successfully, the very first true humans that had a full physical body, although they were still very, very etheric. Like they had 50-foot-tall etheric bodies. I mean, that's huge. But they were still big in stature, but no more than maybe 8 feet tall physically. I should say that. I think they were about 12 or 14 feet tall physically. But still, the point is that regardless, they were still huge in their etheric bodies. And then very quickly, these big ape-like creatures, I guess you would call them almost gorillas, or something of that size, became much, much smaller, and the physical part, and even more so, the etheric part started to shrink down. So the etheric body eventually became just a few inches away from the physical, as it is in us today. But that took like 8 million years or so for that to take place. A long time. And during that time, human beings actually lived like humans. They actually had a consciousness of their creator. They started to use their sacral centers a good deal of the time, therefore planning and reflecting on their own behaviors and planning for their futures and interacting together in ways in which they were showing some kind of, we'll say, loving relationship towards each other. An amazing array of things changed, all because of the fourth ray. Now, what was going on during this, from the 64 million years ago until, we'll say, humans were in this physical form starting 16.5 million years ago, well, animals were evolving tremendously, and there was all kinds of new types of animals, and the Earth went through tremendous upheavals, a lot of changes in terms of climate and in terms of where land masses were. This is all part of the design, because now, since there's four rays focused on the planet, and the fourth is helping the most adaptable part of us, which is our sacral center, all of these creatures were adapting more quickly, and Earth was able to change more rapidly, challenging animals and getting them to develop quicker and quicker. Again, to get that kingdom to grow and to eventually to develop humans as quickly as possible. You might say, well, what's the big hurry? How come we were so much in a hurry? I mean, some planets, don't they go slower? And some planets go immensely slower. But Earth is going fast because this is like a second try for us. There was like a prior Earth in a different solar system, but still connected to the same sun that we have, but it was an earlier version of it, that didn't make it. It created human beings on it, but the human beings turned out to be immensely destructive and evil, and they destroyed each other, destroyed the planet, and so we're trying to make up for this now. Because we have one of our chores, we're trying to become good. We're trying to overcome a certain kind of nastiness, evilness that could develop throughout the universe, but right now it's rare. So we're kind of like the laboratory for overcoming this. And we need to do it quickly because we screwed up. We've lost billions of years. A billion years is a long time. It's still, you know, the whole universe, as we know it, the physical part of the universe, is less than 14 billion years old. You lose a billion years, you lost a lot of time. Let me tell you, that is a significant amount of time. Now, we may not have lost even quite that much, because this first Earth actually developed itself mostly only in etheric form, and it did so in millions of years instead of billions of years. It's a lot easier if things are just in electromagnetic form rather than physical. The dense physical slows everything down, makes everything move very, very, very slowly, and develop itself very slowly. It's hard to do it in physical form. Now we're at that point where we're doing it in physical form, and we have to make up for the etheric time that we lost, so everything is accelerated. And that's part of the reason why we did this business of joining the etheric humans with, like, physical apes of some sort, huge, huge creatures, that saved us the 10 million years, or maybe 5 of the 10 million years, because that was a lot of time. And that really helps us out. Okay, so what was going on with all the mammals? The mammals were really accelerating the process and helping to develop the creatures that were necessary to join with the human consciousness that was going on simultaneously. Humans were running around in etheric form, remember, while all the time that animals were, and our mammals were developing themselves into apes, and big apes at that. So a very interesting set of parameters was taking place simultaneously. Now, this is against the theory of evolution as we understand it. Evolution says that things are pretty much linear, pretty much. And we are at the apex of the whole process, whereas everything is below us, and that's not the way it worked. And there's a lot of glitches in it. And another thing that evolution doesn't take into account is a thing called de-evolution. In other words, some life forms don't continue to develop. And we know this to be true because, although evolutionists don't want to admit to it, it's true because many types of humans stopped evolving. They just stopped. And there's no explanation for it. If you're a human being, you should certainly be evolving as quickly as any of the mammals around you. And that didn't happen. There's some types of human beings that barely evolved for millions of years. Homo erectus is an example. And I mean, that doesn't make sense because we had more advanced brains, we had more advanced senses in some respects, and the mammals around us were adaptable and were amazingly evolving, and those Homo erecti, I guess that's what we would call them, were not doing that. Some of the tools they used, they had to use the same tools like a million years with barely any change, tools being like stones that they sharpen, et cetera. And you know, a million years is a very long time for a human being not to do much. That's an amazing contradiction, something that is not addressed by a lot of people into evolution. That's only one example, but Homo erectus is actually a whole bunch, a couple of dozen. So there, it's more than one time. Okay, but getting back to the point I'm trying to make, is animals were really, really changing quickly. And it was a good thing because it was working in concert with the Earth. Earth itself was attempting to create this by creating fast changes. What are some of the fast changes? Well, volcanic action would come and go. Climates would change radically. It would go from very hot and warm, wet, to very dry and cold and then hot again, and then glaciation and no glaciation. And I mean, we're talking about like radical changes that the dinosaurs really didn't have to deal with, except in tens of millions of year chunks or more. These things were happening sometimes in thousands of years, and certainly over a million years. So the Earth became really active to change the life forms and make them really active. And you know what? I'm running out of time. Oh, I find this so interesting. I love talking about this. Okay, well, all I can tell you is I'm going to talk more about it next week, I promise, and I'll finish this whole saga, I think, next week and explain where we are today and where we're going to be going in the future. I don't have any time to do that tonight, but at least it's something to think about. I'm hoping I'm opening up a new way of seeing life on Earth and how it changed and why. The why is so important. I think it's a big, big deal. Okay. I only got a couple of minutes here, and I'm going to just tell you that for those of you who can, on Sunday, this October 5th, you can listen on 1170 AM if you're in the northeastern part of the U.S., some parts of it anyway. Listen to the basics of ray energies, which is some of the stuff I'm talking about tonight. And if you're not there, if you can't get to that part of the country, you don't live in that part of the country, that's fine. You can still listen on the Internet. And all you got to do is go to WDISAM.com, and from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, you can listen in. That's it. Yeah. And if you're right there, you can do it same time. If at 4 o'clock, you can just tune in if you're in Boston or so. And also, I want to mention that on October 6th, which is this coming Monday, Mimi's going to be over at Glendale Borders talking about the chakras, another thing we talked about tonight. So if you have a chance and you're in the Phoenix area, Glendale Borders is over way on like Bell Road. It's in northwestern Phoenix. Drop in from 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m. and join in. You can ask her questions about the chakras, and she'll tell you all kinds of stuff, I think. And you'll also hear her talk about it if you don't want to ask any questions. There's no charge. It's just a thing to get together. And I've been hearing there's something like a dozen people or so that show up on a typical night out there. And it's a great experience. It's a great experience because you get to have some live interaction. And Mimi is a member of the spiritual group that I'm a member of, and we do all kinds of things. And one of the things she does is she goes on and talks about metaphysical subjects. Okay, well, I hope tonight's show has been interesting. I've had a great time talking about this. I love this stuff. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.